Good morning, welcome to the study session of Mesa City Council for Thursday, February 12th, 2009. We'll begin with item number one, which is to review the agenda for this Monday's city council meeting. This Tuesday, that's right. Monday is President's Day, so Tuesday. Page number two. Page number three. Page four. Mr. Richens?
I just have a few questions about the Gilbert Road University intersection, the widening. Just making sure statistically that we're widening intersections that need to be done.
Go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning, Dan.
Morning.
Spent a little time looking at traffic counts and projections, and looking at 1998, the intersection was handling about 58,000, and looks like it's handling about the same now. What are the MAG projections for 2025 for that?
Mayor, Councilmember Richens, MAG projections show about 62,000 cars a day. We're seeing about 58. I'm sorry, in 2030 it'll be about 62,000 a day. So, just up a little bit. It's not so much the that increase that justifies this project. It's the fact that today we're having operational problems in the AM peak and the PM peak periods, as well as we've got a crash problem out there.
Yeah, usually when there's not much of a traffic count anticipated increase, there's a safety issue. What's the safety
Correct.
Issue that's there?
Today we've got this intersection ranks fifth in the city out of almost 400 signalized intersections, fifth in total crashes. I believe it's about 78 crashes in a two-year period. In addition to that, we have, those are made up of rear-end crashes and left-turn crashes. Both will be addressed with this project. We'll be able to add dual left-turn lanes here, which will, and we'll get traffic signal be set up such that we have dual left-turn lanes, and it's fully protected so that you can only turn on the green and yellow arrow. So that's going to add a safety feature, really. And then when we add the third through lane in each direction, that's going to adjust the congestion and relieve some of the rear-end crashes that we see as a result of congestion.
Great. Thank you. That's all I had, Mayor.
Mayor.
Thanks, Dan.
Councilmember Fender?
Thank you. If I could follow up, I had a whole different set of questions and more along the lines of engineering. I did have an opportunity yesterday to make some calls and get a lot of the good info, and I appreciate that. One of the positives that came out of this, and maybe you could let us know, this project was planned for a couple of years ago and then was delayed, and I understand there's quite a bit of cost savings with that, and maybe you could let us know.
Yes, Mayor. Councilmember Finter, this project was actually set to go to council in February of 07, 2 years ago, almost to the date. And at the time we were prepared to go forward to council, it was a project that we thought that the GMP was going to be at $10.3 million, and then we add the 10%. Today, our GMP is at $8.35 million, almost $2 million lower than where we were 2 years ago. So with the current economic conditions, we're seeing some reductions in price and some savings.
I appreciate that. Having been through a few visits and meetings this week with local businesses and individuals in construction industry, I've really felt the pain of what's going on in the community, and it caused me to kind of reflect on this contract. I think this is one of the first of the big of the new bond proposals that'll go through. So I think. Is that correct? We're going to see a long series of these. And
yes, Councilmember Finter, this is the first of our 08 bond projects that we're coming forward with. We will be releasing Fire Station 218 next month, or here in the next week for bidding next month, and bringing it forward to council soon. That will be our next one. And then 215 and 219 later this year. So we'll be coming forward with a number of projects very quickly and getting them out on the street, get them bid and get them put in place. But this is our first big one.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Mayor. If I can just follow up, I have a theme I'm going with here, and with regard to these, I appreciate what we're doing. The citizens put faith in us to be able to make these capital improvements into the community of public safety. And what I'm hoping for, and this sounds a little odd coming from me, is that we look for every opportunity in this process. And I realize it's a very defined legal process that we use to go through and look at these contracts and bid them, and we're trying to get the best dollar or best buy for the citizens. I'm hoping that in that process there's the opportunity to have some discretion, consideration for who we use, how we use those folks, can we get those dollars as close back to the local community as possible. Maybe it's a discussion down the road for us as a council to, you know, and looking at the bidding system. I think along with these big capital items, the stabilization program that's going to be coming to Mesa, it sounds like we have that approval, whatever potential stimulus program that might come, I think there's some opportunities here to kind of look at how we do things. I'm not promoting a protectionist approach to any of this, but I think I would love to have that discussion in this community and maybe see where we can keep those dollars locally. And I believe it's Hunter Contracting. I heard some very positives back about them. They do have Mesa residents that they're, you know, a good significant role. They plan to use Mesa contract subcontractors in this process. And so I think there's no concern at all about this particular company, but I'm hoping as we look on this long line down the road of what we're doing that we can look at those. So thank you, Mayor.
Mayor, just a Councilmember Fent. Thank you, Councilman Fenter. Councilman Richens.
Just one more. Part of this is paid for by Prop 400. Why don't we get reimbursed till 2021? I was curious about that.
Mayor, Councilmember Richens, when we submitted our 70-some projects many years ago, they were all allocated out over time in the four phases. We couldn't build all of them in the first phase. We didn't get to ask for which phase they fall in. We were able to accelerate some, bring them forward. What we do then is we can't get paid back because the system has to be balanced financially. So we can't get paid back until the original programmed year. If it's important to the community, and this one was to Mesa, to bring it forward, we have to pay for that and wait for our reimbursement. The good news is our reimbursement is $2.75 million. We don't see it till 2021, but there's a big incentive to build this now because we know 12 years from now this is going to be a very expensive project. So it really helps us financially to build this now.
Got something else?
I was also going to point out that by doing this with the bond package, it's kind of leveraging that money so that, you know, in 2021, $2.75 million is not what it is today. And I know Chuck's run the numbers on that, and even with interest, I think by bringing that money forward in through our bond program, we save almost $1 million.
Well, and I think we need to explain. In our Prop 400 program, the dollar amounts that were allocated were not indexed. They were fixed.
Right.
So in 2004, they would allocate, in this case, what was it, 2.75, you say?
Yes.
That 2.75 was a fixed amount that never changed, regardless of when it was reimbursed. If it was reimbursed tomorrow or reimbursed in 2025, it's still $2.75 million. So you have your time value of money, which means the $2.75 million commitment from Prop 400 5 years ago, is what's it going to be worth 15 years from now? About half that, if that, in real dollars.
And just to kind of add on to that, we really save $1.9 million is what we save by accelerating this project.
Yeah, but I think that's an important thing to understand, that not only because what Mr. Clevenger said about it being put into the different section or different time periods that Prop 400 is divided into, but also those dollar amounts don't change at all. Costs change, everything else changes, but the dollar commitment to the city. So what started out as under Prop 400 as anywhere from a 30-70 split where Prop 400 would put up regardless what percentage it is, by the time we actually cut the checks 10, 15 years later, while the city's portion of that goes up, the regional portion does not change, which means it's to our benefit to accelerate when we can, because I think that both from a cost standpoint right now, as Beth said, we can get things a lot cheaper, but also from just a time value of money, I think we end up on the positive side of that where it makes sense. Okay, thank you. I'd also like to echo what Councilmember Fender said, and it's something we have talked about. We've talked about the city being loyal to its citizens. We're asking a lot of them, and I think we need to do whatever we can to give back and to keep dollars within Mesa. I agree. I don't see this as protectionist, as part of just, you know, this is a two-way street. Hey, that makes sense. Two-way street, we're talking about streets? Yeah, thank you. Where's the snare drum when you need one, right? Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Richens. We need to work within the procurement guidelines. I understand that. But we need to be loyal as much as we can to our own citizens, especially when it comes to projects such as this. at the professional level. You know, we have a lot of qualified, good people in this town that do a lot of work, that when they go to other cities, and I don't want to get in for tit for tat, but I guarantee you when they go to other cities, they are not on equal footing in trying to get work, and we need to at least put them on equal footing and see what we can do to keep work within the city. I think that's just standard. That's what we need to do. So however we can do that, I'd echo what Councilmember Fenner says, and let's try to do it. Thank you very much.
Mayor.
Yes, Councilmember Higgins.
We skipped 4E. I have a question on 4E.
Okay.
It's a money question, so maybe it's... The question is, did all the bidders have that same increase in their cost, or was it just the one that we had already gone with? Like, I think we already chose a bidder in June for this project, and then the price went up considerably. Did all the other bids that come in also have this price increase?
All the bids that came in did have the same restrictions on what would happen to their pricing after a contract was awarded. So if we had awarded to a different vendor and the market changed, they would have had the same opportunity to come back and make those adjustments.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. Thanks.
Okay. Anything else on page 4? Page 5? Page 6? Page 7.
Mayor.
Councilmember Higgins.
5G. I was having a difficult time understanding what we were even talking about in 5G. Could someone explain that, you think? Oh, great. Kareen's here.
It's Nystrom.
I just read through that and like, oh, just ask somebody.
Sure. Good morning. My name is Kareen Nystrom. I'm the airport director at Falcon Field. Basically, what this is it's an amendment to the existing boilerplate master tenant lease that the city council has previously approved, that basically sets out the parameters with the scenario that you have a primary tenant that has a lease agreement with the city. If that primary tenant should happen to default on the lease, if there is a condominium association in place which has subleased from that master tenant, they would then have the option of assuming the responsibilities of performing on that master tenant lease in lieu of the master tenant doing so. And then in the event the condominium association were to default in this situation, then the individual unit owners would then have the ability to step in and uphold the terms of the master tenant lease so that they would not lose their vested interest in their ownership of their particular improvements. And those provisions were not previously included, particularly as it pertains to the unit owners having that right to step in if the other two should happen to default.
So is there a certain percentage of people that would have to be involved as we step two steps down? Like, you know, the sublease to the condominium association?
Right.
And if they can't hold it together, then you can go one step further to the individual condominium
yes.
owners?
Yes.
So it would then be broken up, whatever thing we had, into individual?
Right.
And does that help us later release, or now we're all in smaller sections? Or
We're in smaller sections at this point, but... generally, what we would do, or what the city would do, is it would encourage the unit owners, and it would probably be in their best interest to form some other type of association, or to hire a management company to help manage the lease for them so that the city is not required to work with each individual tenant.
Okay, thank you.
And I think maybe a little bit of background on this. We don't sell property at Falcon Field.
That's
correct. We lease property at Falcon
yes.
Field. And so what's happened out there as this development goes on, you have a master developer that comes in and leases a large piece of land, builds hangars or a group of hangars, and then subleases individual hangars or groups of hangars to other people. But they're continuing to make payments. The major developer who leased the big part is making payments to the city for the big part. And if they default on that, it puts those individual tenants or sublessees at risk. And what I understand, we're stepping in to both protect them and also to protect us, because in reality, we don't want to get into this.
Mayor, we'd rather have those tenants
take care of the problem, be able to solve the problem.
Give them an opportunity to find a solution.
Otherwise, we have to step into the role of the master developer, which we don't want to do. If we wanted to do that, we'd do it ourselves.
That's correct, sir.
That's an accurate description then?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Okay, anything else on page 7? Page 8? Page 9. I have an item on 8A, or a question, not a question, but a comment. As I was thinking through this annexation, and I realized we're going to provide utilities to, or consider providing utilities, and under this new policy would actually agree to provide utilities to those who are not annexed in the city. I have a concern that normally when we provide utilities, they do annex, and therefore things such as right-of-ways and easements and things like that are sort of taken care of because now they're in the city. What if we agree to provide utilities to somebody who's in the county, who fronts a major street, who is still in the county, it's a county road, and then 5-6 years down the road, we do have an annexation, we take over the road, and we go back to this person, and all of a sudden they play hardball with us on providing right-of-way. I want to make sure that if we're going to provide utilities to somebody who's in the county or who is not going to annex, that as part of that arrangement, part of that utility service agreement, that they also agree up front that any dedications of rights-of-way or easements or whatever we may need down the road, that they're going to agree up front as part of providing that. If we can do that or can't do that, or how we ever do that.
Yes.
I'm getting heads shaking all different ways.
Go ahead, Christine.
Yes.
Go ahead, Christine.
Under the terms and conditions for sale of utilities, even if they're not required to annex, we still require improvements to city standards, which includes dedication of right-of-way and off-site improvements. That's oftentimes the issue. And the proposal that we have before you, that the baseline would be to build the city standards, but if somebody wants to do something other than that, then they have an appeal process up through the TIC and through council.
I think one thing we talked about were these orphan properties that, you know, you have that mile stretch of county road, and we're not going to have them go in and put curb gutter sidewalk when it makes no sense, where all of a sudden we're only going to have 100 foot of frontage in the middle of nowhere. It's still in the county. How can we then, by agreement, require them in some future time to dedicate that right-of-way when it will become in the city and it will become part of this? Can we do that?
I think that was the plan, that as part of the sale of utilities, we are going to request, even if we're not doing annexation, we are going to work with that property owner to provide for as much of the comply with the development standards as possible.
Well, I understand
including,
that.
Let's say dedication of right-of-way.
I can see this happening more often than not, that we agree that they're not going to have to physically put in. Maybe they make it in lieu of payment. Maybe they do whatever. Well, you're talking about a county road with the county. They can't dedicate right-of-way to the city of Mesa, can they, on a county road in a county island?
We've typically worked with individual property owners, and if the county does not want to accept it as right-of-way dedication to the county, we accept it as a PUFE, a public utility and facilities, which in the future will allow us to construct a street.
Okay. As long as we take care of that, because I don't want to put us in a situation where we're providing a benefit now and then it comes back to bite us later, where all of a sudden somebody is not willing to work with us 10 years, 15 years down the road in providing that dedication or that right of way, or that easement, whatever we need. Okay, as long as that's taken care of.
Yep.
Councilmember Summers?
For our city attorney, if we put this into a development agreement where they're promising the dedication of the right of way for future improvements, and then they decide after annexation they don't want to do that, what authority do we have in the courts to go back and compel them to provide the right of way?
I think what Beth just said is if in the utility service agreement, mm-hmm. So they're not annexing into the city, but we're using a utility service agreement, they are dedicating it as a PUFE. and then we have the right to use that in the future if they do annex in.
Are there any restrictions on that? You have to use it for certain purposes, or does it have the force and effect of a right-of-way, an ordinary right-of-way?
Yeah, let me ask.
We could use it for sidewalks or streets. It just doesn't have to be for your utility.
Let me ask Donna, since she's been working with Beth on this.
Mayor, Councilman Summers, yes, the wording of the PUFEs are such that we can put any normal street improvements in them. Okay. Curb, gutter, basically anything we need.
So there's a recorded encumbrance on that property through the easement. Okay, that's good. As long as we make sure we do
what he
Vice
said.
Mayor?
I'm just getting thorough enjoyment out of this discussion simply because every time we talk about this, I think we're doing the same thing, and then we tweak it, and I think we've done it, and then now we tweak a little more. And each time, I think we're after the same goal every time, but somehow we just don't get it quite right. Are we getting closer this time?
Vice Mayor.
I mean, as a concept, we've had the same concept for years that I've been on council, but
yes,
in legalese and what we actually have in ordinance doesn't always quite bring us there. And I'm hoping we're a lot closer this time.
I hope we are also. What we're trying to do is actually push some of the decision-making down to the staff level, that if there are appropriate negotiations, modifications to standards, that we could hopefully get some of the cases resolved at a staff level, but always having the appeal to the city council. But you're absolutely right. The idea, whether it's sale of utility or annexation, is that we encourage improvement to city standards, that we, you know, improve the streets, the sidewalks, all those kinds of things, that we extend the utility lines. We're trying.
Mayor and Council, let me just say, because I know this continues on, but I suspect it will always continue on, because there are no identical situations out there. And so we're trying to build in a little bit more, I guess, opportunity for dialogue and discretion in the decision-making process. But I think Christine said it well. This is the overarching philosophy here that council, I guess, needs to make sure you're comfortable with, is at the end of the day, we're making the assumption in the long-term vision of the city, that all properties that are designated as county islands today at some point will be included in the city, or the city will have to provide that service. Recognizing, though, under the current policy, which requires annexation for all county islands, that it makes it somewhat difficult or problematic in some cases, in those isolated islands, I guess we call them the horse properties, that creates a difficulty for delivering services as part of an annexation, whether it's police or fire, whatever it might be. So really, we've now tried to come back, keeping again the concept that we anticipate at some time in the future of the city that all those properties will become part of the city. We are moving forward to allow properties to be provided services, utility services from the city. While we may not require the annexation, we are requiring as much as possible and trying to be working on a reasonable effort, but we're going to expect all the property owners to move a little bit closer towards complying with the development standards. Because at the end of the day, when those properties are annexed in, and if they already have the water and sewer, the cost to bring those roads, develop those sidewalks, put in those lights, whether it's today, 5 years from now, or 10 years from now, once we put in those water and sewer lines, that's going to be our cost. And so, like most of the rest of the city, as it's developed, those costs are included in the cost of development that we all pay when we purchase our home. So we're trying to create a fair and reasonable approach so that there's not future residents or businesses or whatever they might be that are going to eventually be part of the city, that they're having to pay their fair share at the appropriate time. So that's kind of the general concept of what we're moving towards.
Well, and I think there's something important that you mentioned, which is that no two pieces of property are the same. And I think if there's one thing that's different about this, and I hope it's different, is that by putting it down and allowing staff flexibility, that we can recognize that each case may be unique. And I think in the trying to draw a hard line just doesn't work, because you can never push. We're finding out it's very difficult to push a particular piece of property to one side or the other. We always run into conflicts. I'm hoping that we bring in some common sense and that comes with this flexibility so we can find real solutions that are based on the realities that Mr. Brady talked about. Number one, we need to be able to provide services, and we just need to understand that there are properties that the only place they can get sewer and water is from the city of Mesa. We also need to look to the future and make sure that as the city develops out that we don't create additional burdens that we shouldn't as a city, and also additional hazards for providing things as simple as fire service. Trying to find that balance, I know, is really difficult, but I'm hoping that we're through this, we're giving the staff the tools to work on individual cases, and we also take into account the rights of the citizens, that if they don't agree with what the staff is doing, they can always appeal that and come to the council or a subcommittee of the council. I think that's a good mix, and I think that's what's different about this approach than maybe has been tried in the past, maybe not drastically different, but hopefully it's a little bit of a tweak, and we've learned from the past experiences on how we can handle these on a case-by-case and throw a little rational common sense thought and give you the authority to apply that. I think that was one of the big challenges earlier, is that you may have thought all of it. I'm not sure that you had the whole authority. Councilmember Higgins?
Is the general plan still a part of the overall step-by-step? Oh, you know, you don't meet our general plan, so we would never annex you, and we're not going to give you water.
Yes, one of the requirements is conformance with the general plan, and that's where we look to John and his staff to look at those cases and make a determination of whether they are consistent with the vision of the residents of Mesa that have voted on that general plan.
So if it was a site that we saw that, yeah, we can see how if we had a minor general plan amendment that would work, would we do that?
Well, you couldn't really do a minor general plan amendment if it was not annexed into the city, but that's where John's staff would have to look at it and make a determination as to whether or not it's consistent with the general plan.
So we might annex the property in knowing that the follow-up would be a minor general plan amendment.
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, within our planning area where we do have the established general plan, we can do plan amendments whether it's actually in the city limits or not,
okay,
because the general plan applies regardless.
Right.
So we could handle those before annexation if necessary.
But the property before it got utility services would have to meet, or annexation would have to meet, the general plan for that area.
And let's be clear, because a lot of properties that come to us for annexation are already developed, and they may not be consistent with the general plan. So we're kind of the opportunity for that discussion is kind of passed. So we're kind of at that point dealing with whatever that use is that's sitting in front of us at that time, mm-hmm, and we're making that evaluation.
Right.
Now, if it's a undeveloped parcel that is seeking annexation that is in conflict with the general plan, certainly that would be part of the conversation and the discussion about whether or not to provide services or annexation. That, I think that would be part of our consideration. If we have high industrial user in an area that our general plan says should be more residential, and they want to, you know, or they want to just buy utility services but not annexation, we'd probably have a lot of concerns about that.
And that's, I think, where one of the challenges we're going to have is, because, you know, when do you end the decision to provide utilities and begin zoning on county islands, in a sense, is what we're doing. And I think that we need to have that discretion, that if somebody is blatantly not disregarding because they're in county, if they have a use that is in contrary to what the general plan is, that should be taken into consideration. But we got to be really careful as to how we take that not into consideration and not use this utility as a hammer to enact specific zoning ordinances for someone outside the city. I have a real concern with that. So
right,
hopefully,
well,
the process will, once again, common sense.
Yeah. And John,
balance
me if
that
wrong,
out.
But we wouldn't be doing zoning. It's basically just a determination from the professional.
Well, in a sense,
staff,
it's de facto zoning, though, because, for example, if somebody comes in and they want utilities and we don't agree with their use of property, now we hold that hammer over their head that, well, change the use and we'll give you utilities. And I don't know that that's where we want to go, because I see all sorts of pitfalls if we go down that road. But there are going to be cases where the uses are so egregious that we will have to take pause and say, you know, do we really want to encourage continued use when this use is blatantly contrary to what we see as the long term? We're going to have those situations. It's going to come up. And I just think we need to be very careful in how we handle those. And
yeah, and we'll make sure we bring those to council.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brady. Thank you. That shall be duly noted. Councilmember Finter.
Thanks. And I just heard tick. Having been on two tick meetings now, that is a most unpleasant experience. And we have strained the patience of my fellow council members trying to learn and get through it. So before I was an advocate of, hey, let's have some discretion, and I appreciate the mayor's comments. Boy, I hope we get as much clarity and consistency right off the bat, because it is definitely difficult to be fair and consistent. So thank you so much.
And thank you for that comment.
The moment of zen.
Who assigned you to that committee, by the way? Oh, okay. All right. Anything else on page 9? Councilmember Richens or Kavanaugh? Kavanaugh.
And Higgins.
Councilmember Kavanaugh, you sound alike. I'm sorry.
He's a tall one. All right. I have a question on number 10 on the delinquent accounts. At least the council report we have seems to indicate that the delinquent accounts are actually holding rather steady in terms of, in spite of the economy, the utility delinquencies are up a little bit, a minor amount in the last quarter, and the others are relatively constant. Is this a trend that you've seen really over the last, beyond the last 12 months? Is this relatively stable?
Mayor, Council, yes. We have not seen a real trend that number is going up significantly yet. We do monitor it based on a 24-month average, and we're within a tenth or 2% of that average. So we really haven't seen any real impact on that as yet.
Great. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you.
Councilmember Higgins?
Go ahead, Scott. Then.
Okay.
Because I'm moving on.
Mayors.
On that item, are we seeing an uptick in the number of late payments coming into the city and delinquent accounts on the short term from the economy? Are we even checking those? Or maybe somebody from utilities?
Yes. Mayor and Council Member Summers, we had a conversation, I think, last week in our Mesa Set meeting, and we are having to address that. We're working on a lot more payment plans. We'll be getting a briefing from Utilities Department here in the next couple weeks, so we're still monitoring that. While we certainly have seen obviously more accounts where the number of accounts may be trending down a little bit, it's not dramatic, and we've been able to manage it, but certainly you can imagine during these times there are more accounts where we are having to work out payment plans and alternative things, but our staff is staying on top of that. And trying to work with our residents who are in difficult times, trying to find out, helping them stay in good with us and continue to receive utilities, but also working on some payment plans that are fair to the city.
And you saw where I was going with that. I was interested in how there are plans to help folks.
Absolutely. We try to work out with the plans with the residents at all times.
So I wouldn't mind hearing that here.
We can talk
as
about
well.
That.
So
sure. We can bring that up in the future.
Our popular press is something that right about that could be very helpful to folks. Thanks.
Yeah, and also in line of, in Phoenix, there was a very highly publicized case just in the last couple of weeks where a condominium association failed to pay their water bill, and so it put all the residents at risk. I mean, they were, I think, close to $70,000 behind, and all of a sudden, all the residents get this shutoff notice. If we could be aware if there's any of those types of situations, and I haven't heard of any, but just in case there is some kind of thing where it affects it, if that is coming up, if you could let us know so that we're not caught off guard.
Our collections folks work real closely with those, watch those, and actually go out and visit that business to make sure that those items are known, and that if we can work out a plan to make sure that those payments get caught up, we do that.
Okay.
Very sensitive. Just, on
that. Make sure that we are, especially
Mayor,
the council member, whose district it is. Let them know if there is a situation developing where you have a master account.
Right.
That was a very
unique situation.
I know it is, but when it happens, it's pretty bad.
Yeah. No, it's so very ugly. So we'll have to
apartment complex things like that. Most of those on water, especially on master accounts. So if we can be at least be aware, let the council member know that is
brewing and you're working with them so they aren't caught off guard?
We can do that.
Okay. Councilmember Higgins?
This is actually 90s.
So that's fine.
They're not. Oh, it is. They're not asterisks right now, but which means they're not on a consent agenda. So we're going to be discussing them.
That's correct.
So are we just going to wait, discuss them at the meeting?
You may ask whatever question you'd like. But we are going to. They are going to be voted on. Whether they're discussed or not, they will be voted on separately in the meeting.
That was requested by members of the
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
We could talk. I mean, we could talk about them now. We'll talk about it later. Later. Okay. Huh? No, that's fine.
Bring it up if you
don't. No, I don't have any questions. So I'm good.
Okay.
Thank you.
You are good, Councilmember Higgins. We all agree on that. Okay. Anything else on page 9? Page 10? Okay. We'll go to item number 2 on the agenda, which is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the 2009 federal legislative agenda. Mr. Butler and Mr. Stoddard.
Mayor, Council, good morning. Mayor, good morning, first of all, but also want to start out by apologizing to the members of the Intergovernmental Affairs Committee who have to sit through this presentation for the second time this week. But I think this really, today's discussion as well, really reflects the difference between what's going on in Washington in our federal report versus what we're feeling at the state and local level, which we discussed in our state report a few weeks ago. The state's discussing how much to cut, and the feds are discussing how much to spend. So if that old adage about who prints the money really rings true at the federal level right now during this downturn. But with that, we will quickly move through the federal discussion and the items affecting the city of Mesa, and feel free to stop us at any time if you have any questions.
All right. The first session of the 111th Congress began at the beginning of January. With the recent elections, the Democrats not only took the White House, but they increased their majority in both chambers of Congress. Mesa's delegation on the federal level stayed the same. Our senators, Kyle and McCain, and our representatives, Flake and Mitchell. Stimulus legislation has obviously been a big focus in the media and will continue to be today with the announcement that a deal has been reached. First of all, we apologize that we can't come forward with all the details of it because the details of the deal at this time are only known by those that were negotiating them in the conference committee, so we will be aggressively trying to find out what the package entails that the deal is. We have heard that a deal was reached for $789 billion for the package. Of course, all the criteria, all the methodology for distribution, all of that will be decided. Just a word of caution. I know that there may be some expectations just because of the way things get talked about the media that the program coming from the Congress was not designed, nor was it intended, to flow down to local municipalities, or there is no intention or expectation of a windfall of money for cities or city projects. There is different components in this package that fund different infrastructure. There's some state aid. But of course, along with all of those type of funds that come down from the federal government, there are all kinds of strings attached, requirements, criteria that have to be met. Now, we do anticipate that there will be some opportunities to compete with other projects for some of the money that gets distributed to a state or to different type of programs, but we'll need to compete with others, and those funds likely will be limited compared to the capacity of projects that are out there. So we just wanted to kind of put that clarification out that there's no expectation of local municipalities or local governments, because that's not what the program was intended for.
And Mayor, just to expand on that, I was asked the question the other day, do you expect that roads across the city are going to be torn up because of this windfall of money that's coming down to the cities? And that, I think the price tag has really created some expectations that just don't bear out when you actually look at the different accounts within the program. Infrastructure spending in the overall stimulus package, at least as it was discussed by the House and Senate, was around $90 billion out of this $800 billion package. And of that, surface transportation, streets, highways, was somewhere around $30 billion. So once you really break that down between the different states and then the split here in Arizona between ADOT and the municipal planning organizations, and MAG in our case, and then you divide that up between the cities, you're not talking about numbers that are just going to make your head spin. So we're going to aggressively monitor this program. There's a lot of different areas, from public safety to utilities to green renewable retrofits and other things that could be a benefit to our community. We are aggressively going to pursue that, but we certainly don't want to create any perception or any idea that we're going to have more money than we know what to do with to reconstruct streets or to build new streets in our community.
And Scott, also, that's a good point, but also, it's not only limited by the available dollars, but the types of projects that are available. Just talk a little bit about how quickly some of these where these projects would actually have to be under the criteria, just quickly, because I think that helps us understand is, while we've got a tremendous amount of needs, the actual number of projects would be eligible gets even shorter if you look at the criteria for turnaround.
Absolutely. And the devil in the detail, that the House and Senate version were very much a part in how quickly those funds have to be obligated. But that being said, they're both quick turnaround. The Senate version called for 180 days that the money must be obligated and out the door. And so to be at that point, also we should thank Congress for not waiving any of the work that goes behind the scenes, from the procurement process to the environmental process or any of those very labor and time intensive activities. So to really be eligible for these dollars, 180 days on the Senate side, 75 days on the House side, you have to have projects that are very far along in the process, that have received or close to receiving their environmental clearance and followed the federal NEPA standards and other responsibilities that with the strings attached to the local communities that actually spend the dollars associated with it. So that's really limited the pool of projects that would even be available for this.
Well, and Scott, and even the pool's smaller, but since it's filtered down through both ADOT and MAG, I mean, realistically, if there's something comes into Arizona, and let's say it even were to hit Mesa, it's going to be filtered through MAG and the MAG transportation plan, and most likely, would that be correct to say that?
That's correct. There, what we're seeing are projects that were projected to be constructed at this time, around this time frame, that are further along in the process.
We might get a deferred benefit, because if MAG, for example, can fund some of those regional projects that are ready right now, then that takes the money that the local money, the Prop 400 money, for example, that was going to be used on those projects, and maybe makes them available for some downstream projects. So our benefit, even if there was, may be the fact that a project that was 5 or 10 years down the road that there might not be funding for, maybe now there could be funding for. So our benefit is perhaps, years down the road, and it isn't even assured, because it's very much a trickle-down indirect effect on it.
Mayor, I think there's another condition there that we all have to be careful with. If the federal dollars supplant an existing project, and you guys need to correct me if I'm wrong, if it supplants a project that's funded like by Prop 400, and now you've freed up those dollars still have to be spent within the time frame, or you have to give the money back. So this is a quick turnaround on everything. Even the supplanting part creates a problem.
Okay, so you're talking about, it has to, well, do we even have projects that meet that standard?
We can. That's where we really want to get into the idea that the pool of eligible projects are very small.
Very slim, yeah.
Well, now, for example, the one we just approved, possibly, or not you haven't approved, the one that's before council, the Gilbert University, may be one, because it meets that kind of criteria. But that's about how far along they almost have to be at this point.
That's true, and I know there was a mention, I think Beth mentioned earlier, the idea that the new fire station's moving forward. Yep. In one of the versions, I believe it was the Senate version, they actually had a pot of money for fire station construction. Now, we don't know what the details of that pot of money are, but that's a type of project that would have been moving forward that we might be able to use stimulus dollars for, but within the overall confines of the obligated money, which is typically then 2 years, that if you supplant dollars to get something built in 180 days, then within a two-year time frame, you have to turn around and have re-spent those dollars on the types of projects that they were initially obligated for.
So,
that,
for example, okay, and one.
No,
again,
no, please.
This is a maybe, perhaps. We're just
exactly.
Going to,
we are. We're all speculating.
Here.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And I share your concern that we go out of this meeting the next day. It's going to be city expects funds for fire stations, and,
right.
and it is all very much a hypothetical.
It is
almost a pipe dream, but. It maybe, perhaps, could happen.
Right.
Okay. Is that enough of a disclaimer? Just to use an example.
Very accurate there.
Just to use an example. If we were building, for example, Beth mentioned the Station 218. Mm-hmm. And let's say that perhaps, in our hypothetical world, there were federal monies that paid for 218 out of this hypothetical fire station.
Yes.
I made my point about that yet. What you're saying is that since we were going to use bond funds, local funds for that, and we took federal funds, we would have to use bond funds. We could build another fire station within 2 years, and that would suffice. If we didn't build another fire station, let's say we have 18, 19, 20, if we were built station 20 out of that, if we didn't build that within 2 years, we would literally have to take the bond funds that we were going to use and could have used for 20 and pay back the federal government for the amount they advanced us. That's what you're saying. That's
the general.
That's a general thing.
Hypothetically correct.
Hypothetically correct. Okay. No, I'm not hypothetically. I'm correcting my hypothetically. Okay. All right. I think I understand it now.
Great.
But once again, I share your concern. Let's don't start counting money. If it shows up, it shows up. Mm-hmm. Let's be ready in case it does show up. But I'm not hoping for my expectations are extremely low in this, simply because you know we're about third or fourth level down, and everybody above us is going to be doing all they can to grab that money before it gets to us.
Absolutely, and what we may see coming out of the final deal, there's been some set aside for additional CDBG money that would be formula driven that would come directly to the cities based on their CDBG formula. There's also justice assistance grants and some other smaller pots of money that could potentially come in directly to the municipality to take care of some of our local needs. And also some of the other pots of dollars that aren't surface transportation, for example, the airports money. We think Gateway and potentially some projects at Falcon Field are in very good position to receive some federal dollars that flow into the airport pots.
And that ability or the chances of getting that are much higher simply because there aren't that many levels above us.
Right.
That's really a direct pipeline because the FAA is already very much involved in airports and the state has sort of removed themselves from involvement of airports. So that it seems like that would be a much
right. And there's already existing lists that are already defined.
Yeah,
and
as part of our normal ongoing process.
They're very aggressive in those and so they're sitting there waiting for those dollars. Really.
That's correct. So we're hopeful that in some other areas as well we can see some measurable response from the stimulus package.
Councilmember Summers?
Since we're on one of my favorite topics on the airport, I might as well chime in now. What projects are we looking at on airport and how do those projects connect off airport? For example, if we really want, the point of this stimulus packages to create jobs in the short term and hopefully over the long term. I think the best example we have, if we were to do this right, since it's the federal government, it's probably not going to happen, but if we were to do this right, a very smart way to invest would be to place infrastructure not the sexy stuff, but the sewers, the water lines, the pipelines, mm-hmm. because we have a large area around the Gateway Gateway Airport that does not have this infrastructure, so we can't build businesses there. Businesses can't locate if they don't have a water supply. For the city, it makes sense because it's low, it's easy to put that infrastructure in, has fairly low cost of operating maintenance, and it's revenue generating. So we generate revenue from the sale of water and utilities, and you have the opportunity to develop businesses. The airport can expand and grow, and I bring the airport in because I think the North Apron is a perfect example of an investment in infrastructure, in this case water, that is utilized by the businesses that moved in there. And three businesses, Embraer, Cessna, Hawker Beechcraft, came in, and those jobs pay in excess $50,000 and up. There's some 200 jobs there now. That's short-term jobs for engineering and development of infrastructure, long-term jobs when businesses move in and start paying those fees. So with the airport, what projects do we have that are ready to go that the FAA may consider? And the other part of this is, what about the off-site infrastructure improvements that we need to help with the on-airport infrastructure, and what is the prospect of perhaps having that type of infrastructure invested in?
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, the FAA really is limited to funding on airport projects.
Right.
But the good news is,
Chris, why don't you explain on airport projects? Because I think there's a misunderstanding of what constitutes an airport project and what constitutes not an airport project.
Okay.
A sewer line outside that leads to an airport is not an airport project.
That's not an airport project. But the good news is,
it's
not, okay.
Airport project would be taxiways,
right.
would be things that are airport infrastructure, lighting,
that are on their
towers,
property,
that are on the
by
property
the FAA.
That are specifically airport related,
and
not
so,
ancillary to
right. And so the good news is, as the council was suggesting, that a lot of the taxiway improvements and pavement projects have taken place on the northwest side have really opened that up, and we've been able to do a great job of creating an employment center there. The one of the first projects that's on the list, high priority, is taxiway Lima, which is would open up the southwest side of the airport, where we're already seeing a lot of activity of interest in that area to develop it out. So that was one of the projects that's on the top of the list, and many other taxiways on that airport, which are important for that airport because and was developed by the military, they didn't provide for a lot of the taxiway infrastructure. So I can't remember the whole list, but I know taxiways were a big part of that. Runway improvements, apron improvements were part of that.
That's correct.
I can't remember all the other things that were on there. But they were definitely improvements that were going to open up parts of the airport today that are challenged by infrastructure.
Yeah, I think the two major ones that provided aircraft access to areas would be taxiways and drainage.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Drainage is actually almost a bigger expenditure than taxiways because the Air Force didn't care where water went as long as it didn't get on the runways, and because they weren't concerned about development.
Right.
But we have huge drainage issues out there, and the north side drainage is about finished, isn't it?
That's correct.
The south side drainage is not finished, those two items are huge as far as our ability to continue development.
No, there's
continue to develop.
There's a lot of great projects that are on that list
that are inside the fence. So
well, and if I may, Mayor, the off-site improvements are important as well because the drainage, the taxiways, our apron improvements have to be there. But so does the water and the sewer lines and power. So are those? They're not airport projects, so those have to be developed in some manner. And until those utilities are available, we're not going to be able to realize new businesses there.
Yeah, Mayor and Councilmember Summers, I think that's part of what's so attractive about some of the projects that, as Mr. Brady said, are shovel ready or shelf ready now at Gateway. Because what we've typically done at Gateway is provided that airside access, the taxiway, the apron access, and then we have relied on the private sector as they come in and develop to help us expand. Some of that water wastewater network, bringing the utilities down, which then we're able to leverage for even future development in the future. And so we're very hopeful that if Taxiway Lima, for example, does come in and we're able to do some of the drainage projects around that taxiway, then once that's open for business, they'll pull utilities down and open up even more areas.
Scott, let's be clear on what we're talking about, because we started out about the stimulus program. Mm-hmm. The items, taxiways, drainage that are inside the fence on the airport are those that would flow through any FAA-driven appropriation of the stimulus.
Right.
While I agree with Councilmember Summers that the outside sewer is necessary, that either is not eligible or it will go through a completely different process, and the odds of getting something for federal stimulus money for sewers and that is very, very limited.
That's correct.
And so we need to differentiate and be careful what we talk about. We can get money, and we normally get money from the FAA for on-airport improvements, such as taxiways and drainage on the airport property itself. Mm-hmm. Anything outside of that, we're going to have to probably figure out on our own, either through city, through our revenue bonds, or through private
public-private partnership.
Public-private partnership, mm-hmm. and have the private industry put in. That's okay, correct. is that accurate?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we shouldn't have any expectation, I don't believe, in getting federal dollars.
The federal dollars aren't going to change their character and be able to do anything different.
No.
But what it's going to do is be able to, we already have existing lists of projects that are needed that have been approved by the FAA and have gone through some level of due diligence. And so it allows, really is, if it works out, is we'll get maybe a year or 2 years worth of funding in 1 year. So I just pushes us further ahead.
Well, because our normal capital projects are up to 95% funded, or 90 to 95% funded by the FAA already, and that's why they're ready. It's already the system we used. They're funded by the federal government. It's just that hopefully the dollars that come into that normal funding mechanism are, number one, greater, and number one, sooner. They get to us sooner.
Right.
So is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So maybe just to wrap this up, while we've all agree that it's dangerous at this point to plan on any money, what we can do and what we have been doing is preparing so that any opportunities that are available, we can take advantage of. We've communicated with all the departments about what possible opportunities might be out there. They've been preparing so that if there's an opportunity to compete or to get some of these grants, we're ready to do that, and we'll continue to communicate with the departments as we get more information.
Mayor, after the Congress has the fun of wrapping up the stimulus package here in the next 2 days, then they get back to work on the budget process. The FY09 budget process is still left unresolved. They have to move forward with an omnibus budget bill to resolve the outstanding issues related to the FY09 budget, and that should be done in short order after, is what we're hearing, after the stimulus package is approved. Then they'll directly move into the FY10 budget. And that's the other portion that we'd really like to talk about today, is just some of the city's priorities moving into the coming federal fiscal year, and some of the programmatic issues that could really impact Mesa. The first of which, we'll stay on the transportation theme, is with our interaction with Federal Highways Administration. Really two issues of relevance to the city. One is the Surface Transportation Reauthorization Act expires this year. And this is the federal program that pays for, that provides funding for federal road systems and networks throughout the country. It's supposed to be reauthorized every 5 years. That never happens. They never meet the deadline, and that process will expire, and the discussions for reauthorization will continue. One of the things I know the mayor and others have really tried to push forward for is more direct funding to the regional areas and more consideration of fast-growing megapolitan areas such as the Phoenix-Mesa Sun Corridor area for direct federal funding to meet our high-growth needs.
And Scott, one of the items of discussion, since we as an Intermountain area get shortchanged on our federal dollars, I mean, we only get, depending on who you talk to, 90 to 91% of the money we put into the federal system do we get back in highway funds. There was talk about creating a joint group that would include the Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, Colorado, Nevada, I think were the ones, delegations in creating this joint group that would go and work on our behalf as a region to to try and change that. Have you heard any updates, or have there been any, has there been any movement toward the establishment of that group?
The Brookings Institution is really taking the lead on trying to coalesce some of our Intermountain areas, both Denver, Salt Lake, the Phoenix Mesa area, Albuquerque, Las Vegas, have been areas of high growth over the last two decades, but as the mayor said, really have not seen the federal benefits to, at least on the transportation side, to that high growth. And so we're going to continue to work with them, Mayor, and I know you have ongoing discussions with Brookings about how this megapolitan area can play a part in that, and I think we're making some traction. We're lucky in the fact that the Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, coming from Las Vegas, his son sits on the Clark County Commission and has been a leader in this dialogue. So we're hopeful that we can enlist the Senate Majority Leader into this effort to try to bring more money back into the megapolitan areas and into the Intermountain West. So we're cautiously optimistic that we'll be able to get some improvement.
And once again, this is not, I know pork and entitlements and earmarks are a big issue, but once again, this is simply trying to get more of the money we are already sending back there, back for our benefit. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't sound like a whole lot if you go from 90% to 92 or 93, but you're talking about literally hundreds of millions of dollars.
That's
correct. That Arizona citizens and citizens of our neighboring states are sending to Washington that are actually coming back to build beltways around Minneapolis and change LA freeways from state freeways to interstate freeways, things like that. We're not getting that benefit. And I think people need to understand this is simply trying to get back more of what we're already sending back there. So it's changing the formula that's used to allocate back to the states that which they already paid in.
That's correct.
Okay.
Mayor, also on the federal highway side, we're also continuing our dialogue about State Route 802, making sure that the federal process associated with that continues on at the expected level. Shifting gears to aviation, the Federal Aviation Reauthorization Bill did expire in September of 2007. We hear that there has been discussions between the House and the Senate. They could not reconcile last year. And also, the House and Senate couldn't come to an agreement, and then the President couldn't come to agreement with the concept of the House and Senate. So they put it off till this year, and we hear that there's already some possibility for movement on this bill in the coming months. Why this matters to Mesa is the funding opportunities for Gateway and for Falcon Field that would be included in the FAA reauthorization. And also, staying on the theme of Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport in particular, the Military Airports Program is a five-year program that the airport has to reapply for that allows additional funding for issues associated with the transformation of a former military base into a civilian use. We certainly expect that we will be reapproved into that program. And what that does is allow money for areas that wouldn't normally be funded through the airport's improvement program. So some of those issues like airport parking and other areas that typically wouldn't meet the criteria of on-field improvements can be funded through the Military Airports Program. Transit, we'll just mention briefly, we're in close work with our two local agencies, Valley Metro, RPTA with the buses, and Metro Rail on light rail to make sure that we continue our interaction with the federal government on adequate funding and expectations that were built into Prop 400 for both light rail and for buses. So we'll continue to closely work with them. And I know Vice Mayor Jones, with his role at Metro, and Councilmember Summers at RPTA, continue to monitor the federal side of how that interaction is going. Homeland Security and shifting to public safety. We continue to have dialogue. We think we've made some progress, though we ran into just a an error or an issue we've got to resolve on our 287G training, trying to get some of our officers trained to help in immigration enforcement. So we hope that that will be resolved in the coming months and that our officers will be able to get that training. We'll continue to monitor opportunities for grant fundings that come down through the UWASI grants and Metropolitan Medical Response grants that help our public safety first responders deal with funding concerns, and also our public safety interoperability. We need to ensure that as interoperability becomes even more of an issue, we find ways to leverage federal dollars to help with our local needs on that. On the environmental side, the Bachelet-Akmel, the Salt River Restoration Project, has been a multi-year process that the city, the Army Corps of Engineers, Maricopa County, and the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian Community have been engaged in to try to restore and revitalize the Salt River east of the 101. We are happy to report that this year should close out the design phase of that project, and we're hopeful that the federal government, it was a priority issue under the Bush administration, and we're very optimistic that this will continue to be a high priority issue under the Obama administration. We've also had discussions with the Army Corps on a pathway that would continue on the south bank of the Salt River. The city of Tempe has really taken the lead on this issue, but what it would do is provide additional connectivity around the river, both for people to have recreational opportunities, but also to have different choices for commuting between the Tempe Town Lake area and the Mesa River View area to increase non-automobile traffic in that area. The EPA, really on that side, we continue to monitor, especially with the new administration, to see what new rules and regulations that the EPA may be sending down that affects everything from air quality to what our utilities will need to do as far as water and wastewater. So we'll just continue to monitor that and engage the impact on the city of Mesa. We've also had dialogue with the Federal Bureau of Reclamation about the East Valley Water Forum, which has been a public-private partnership of which the city's taken the lead in helping to facilitate to allow better modeling of our water resources in the East Valley, both in Maricopa County and in Pinal County. So we'll continue to work with the Bureau on that issue. From the community development side, just again, CDBG grants, community development block grants, always flow into the city, and we're able to leverage that both with nonprofits and others in the area to provide some crucial services to city residents. So we'll continue to monitor those funding levels. And on the housing side, there's two issues moving forward. It was alluded to the Neighborhood Stabilization Program earlier. We did just receive notification of our award of the grant, so that the actions in the 85204 zip code will move forward, and the city's plan will move forward. But we'll see as any changes to that or any additional funding to that program that may flow through Congress, what happens with that in the coming year. Also, mortgage reform. We don't have anything to report, but we do know that both the administration and Congress have talked about the concept of some lucrative package for mortgage reform that could impact homeowners, and so we'll continue to monitor that and see if that has any impact on the city. And the LIHEAP program is also an area that's received tremendous attention. Again, the mayor alluded to this on the transportation side. But on the LIHEAP side, this is the money that goes to mainly disproportionately to cold weather states to assist residents paying for utilities during the wintertime. But in the Sun Belt, we have the opposite problem. We need LIHEAP dollars to come into our area to help with energy costs during the summer when much needed air conditioning and cooling is required for our residents. So we'll continue to fight along with the City of Phoenix and others for fair share on that issue. And quickly through arts and culture, Mesa Grande has been a great community. Mesa Grande Cultural Park has been a great community asset We are going to continue to find ways to work with the federal government to provide opportunities to stabilize that site, to get more interactive abilities for Mesa residents and others in the community to come and tour the site. So we really think that that's a cultural asset that needs to be propped up. And continuing to find ways to look at education and public safety program linkages. The federal government has in the past provided pots of money to help find programs that we could potentially leverage after school or at risk youth to take programs at the Mesa Arts Center or through the Museum for Youth and provide a viable alternative so that they're doing something productive with their free time and not causing a public safety concern in our community. And we'll just end the federal agenda just by reaffirming on the military affairs side, which is something that we typically don't see in our federal presentation, but something that's always important to the city is our relationship with the Boeing Company. They are a major employer, the major employer in our community and a great community asset. And we need to continue to work with our delegation to ensure that Boeing's future in our community is sustained, that the Apache program is well-funded and healthy as times move forward, and that any expansion plans that the military may have for any of their programs, that Mesa would be an ideal location to locate that. So with that, Mayor, we'll turn it over to you and the council for any questions.
Talking to that, let's don't forget Namotali. And
yes.
They are a significant, primarily defense contractor also.
Mm-hmm.
And MD Helicopters, although the vast majority of the work right now is not in defense, they certainly are a potential partner with Boeing in the new helicopter program that I guess they're going to go back out for proposal or bid on. So let's don't forget those two either.
Absolutely, Mayor.
One thing I'd like to say, because I think there was some not erroneous, but maybe make sure that we're perfectly clear. The list that you gave us, as I understand it, there are federal resources available that fund these items, and they ask for a list, and we're throwing out a list. And I don't want to give anyone the impression that a trail along the Salt River is as high a priority as a taxiway on the Gateway Airport.
Mm-hmm.
They're both important, but our first priority are things that will bring the most benefit to our community. However, there are programs available. There is potential funding, and if we can get that funding, that will help us accomplish goals that we otherwise wouldn't be able to accomplish, be it a trail or Mesa Grande or something like that, we're certainly going to go after that. But I don't want anyone to think that somehow we've prioritized and we would take one over the other. We will if it makes the most benefit to our community. And there's been some, I've had some questions on this because from your presentation before the the Intergovernmental Committee, they said, gee, why are we concentrating so much on this project when there are other things that are more important? Well, we understand there's priority lists and everything, but we're going to throw as much as we can out there, and if there are funding possibilities, we're going to try and tap into that. Our first priorities will be those things that bring the most benefit to our community, and we'll work hardest at those. But we understand these things are all not all created equal, but there are equal opportunities. Is that
Mayor, the other thing that's important is they don't necessarily compete for each other.
No, I understand that, and that's what I'm saying.
People need to understand is that while sometimes we put projects out here, a lot of what we tried to do was work within the existing programs the federal government, the agencies already have in place. Some people argue are these set-asides or whatever you call it. We actually, a lot of times, try to work within existing programs that are already established to get them funding. So they're, an FAA program is not necessarily competing with the Bachelet program. So
And I understand that, but I think that there may be that misconception out in the public. And certainly, they compete internally because you have to take staff time one for the other. The fact of the matter is there are existing programs. We have received funding in the past. And if there's the potential of getting it, we're going to make the effort to get that. And I think we just need to let people understand that these are not things we dreamed up just to get it. Most of these are projects that have been ongoing for many years. We have received funding on nearly all of them, if not most of them, in the past, and therefore we're continuing those efforts. It's simple as that.
Mayor, I think that's a very accurate depiction of what we go through both internally to make sure we don't have projects that compete. and at the same time trying to get the most return for Mesa residents. That some of these pots, whether it's for a pot that we may be potentially able to tap into to get money for Mesa Grande, that money is going to a community. It's
somewhere.
Somewhere across this country. And I believe, and I know the council has certainly said that our projects can certainly stand on their own within a community in this country. And so we want to make sure that if there are funds being expended, that we get the best return for Mesa residents.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Mm-hmm. These are things that do stand on their own. We're not making them up just so we can go try and get some federal money. These are projects that we're pursuing that are important, and we're looking for all fundings, any funding source we get, whether it be a grant, whether it be state, whether it be local, whether it be federal, as long as the integrity of the project is maintained. I would never give up the integrity or sell out one of our projects just so we can get federal money. I know that's a concern, and I think that's a bad policy to take. You end up losing that way, and I don't believe that in any of these projects that's the case. These are all incremental. These are all projects that we would fund if we had sufficient funds, and if there are federal monies that Mesa residents have paid in, then we should try and get those back for legitimate and worthwhile projects. So I appreciate that. Any questions or comments from the council? Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Next item, acknowledge receipt of minutes received from various boards and committees.
So moved.
Second. Motion by the Vice Mayor, second by Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Number four, hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Councilmember Fenter?
Mayor, you and I had the opportunity to attend last Saturday a wonderful Building Strong Neighborhoods activity in the Casa del Sol neighborhood. We had nearly 400 LDS youth from the Mesa Mountain View stake that participated. They cleaned up graffiti, cleaned neighborhood, some of the alleyways, address curbs. Wonderful experience. I think the highlight of the beginning of that was when they all sang happy birthday to our mayor, whose birthday was last Saturday. So we appreciate that effort. Wonderful impact. You can see the difference. So thank you, sir.
Can you see the difference in me? No. No better. Yeah. Vice Mayor.
Yeah. Also last Saturday, I was out at the East Mesa Service Center with our solid waste collection. Very successful. I still have a visual in my mind of a guy driving up in a BMW convertible with a water softener strapped in the front seat. It just seemed out of place, but
well,
very successful event.
And Vice Mayor, your star status must have attracted quite a crowd because we had over, I'm looking for 1,000 cars go through that day. So thank you for helping out.
He was trying to soften the leather in the seats. Councilmember Summers.
We need to buy a snare drum, really. The on Thursday, several of us attended the ribbon cutting for Cessna. Cessna has brought 70 high-wage jobs to the Gateway Airport on the North Apron. This goes back to my example earlier about how the city invests wisely in infrastructure. Not only do we create a revenue stream through the sale of our utilities, but also the private sector is then enabled to bring in those the jobs that our residents need and the visitors. Yes, so fantastic facility. Mayor gave another rousing speech as he always does, and appreciate your comments, Mayor.
But I was disappointed no one sang happy birthday. I don't know what the deal was.
You shouldn't. If you hear me sing, you will not be disappointed that we did not sing. So.
Okay. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. Yesterday, most of the council had the ability to attend a meeting with the Dobson Ranch Homeowner Association that continues a tradition of annual meetings that extends for more than 25 years. And I wanted to thank all the city staff who were able to take their time to be there to discuss issues of interest to the association in Southwest Mesa. We've had a very good partnership throughout the years with the Dobson Association on many fronts in terms of street maintenance, code compliance, landscaping, lighting, lights, things like that. And it's been a very valuable partnership. And I thank you all for your ability to attend.
Thank you. Councilmember Richens.
Last Friday, I had the opportunity to attend a symposium that was a joint effort between ASU and SRP called Canalscape. It was talking about developing along the canals instead of ignoring them, but how to integrate them with our development and have future development. learned a lot about Scottsdale waterfront and how much the city of Scottsdale actually subsidized that project to make it happen, which was quite expensive. But it was a really neat event, a lot of history and information. Thanks.
Okay.
I believe Vice you Mayor. Also spoke at another breakfast last week.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, the Chamber of Commerce, how quickly we all forget. Chamber of Commerce sponsored a breakfast with the mayor, and we had about 320, I think it was, people attend and had a good chance to discuss Mesa, where we are, and lay out some of our foundations of moving forward in economic development, which I hope we'll be able to talk about in more detail as we move along. And we're going to revisit some of the priorities that this council made during our retreat last fall. And Mr. Brady and I are working on coming back to merge those two, because they are very complementary. And in the coming weeks, we'll have some presentations on refocusing and taking some of the priorities and objectives we set as a council and integrating those into a plan of action that we're going to try to pursue over the next year to 2 years to 5 years. So thank you for reminding me of that. It was very good. So thank you for the chamber. Thank you to the Chamber of Commerce for sponsoring that, and to the Mesa Hilton, who always does a wonderful job in putting on community events and helping the community out. They did a great job. So thank you. Anything else? Mr. Brady.
Just a reminder, our next council meeting will be Tuesday, February 17th. We do that because of President's Day. And then we have a study session on February 19th, Thursday, February 19th. And just a reminder, our next pancake breakfast will be in District 6 at Station 205, Saturday, February 21st. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Ms. Crocker, are there any requests to speak from the public?
No requests, Mayor.
There being no requests, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Motion from the Vice Mayor, second from Councilmember Summers. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much. We are adjourned.